Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
It's America's game of the week as Dak and the Cowboys take on Caleb Williams and the Bears.
Early season football, no one knows really to what to expect. And it's such a week-to-week league in the NFL. If you look at last week and what that team is this week is all dependent on how well they practice, the matchups. All these teams are so talented.
Lions dropped a 50-burger on Ben Johnson in his return for the Bears, and then we told you about the Cowboys game. There you go. So the Bears off to a tumultuous start. They had a good first drive and really went downhill after that. Lions had 52 on them today.
Wow.
Yeah. So you want to be a head coach?
No, you don't. Sometimes it's pretty good being a play caller. Just get to coach football, no BS.
So, don't have to answer those questions, right?
73 points in the last five quarters. 73 points. I mean, this is the NFL. This isn't like playing a, you know, an FBS school and an FBS, whatever those, you know, the different sub-league. I mean, just to say it bluntly, the Bears suck. It's terrible. The way they look the last five quarters, that's bad football.
Yesterday, Patrick and Olin and Mully were on it after the game. Shout out to everyone who watched. I was looking at the views on YouTube. Y'all showed out for the YouTube broadcast of it, and we appreciate it. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show. We're talking about the Bears, and we're taking your phone calls. We also want you to know you can watch the show, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score.
Yeah, Patrick is usually a hopeful human who is patient from his years with bad teams, but he's broken after a couple weeks, and I totally understand why.
And Olin said it right, and for all of the guys that played the game, I think they should follow his rule. I don't care about what you say, what's on the film. And Olin, I guess, had predicted it. Olin had called for them to get beat. I think he had it either 38-17 or something like that.
Had the beatdown?
Yeah, he saw a beatdown coming on film, and he spoke it into existence on the pregame show. My goodness.
Good times.
312-644-6767. Let's start with Keith in Shorewood. Hey, Keith, you're on The Score. What do you think about the Bears?
Gentlemen, you remember about this time last year, maybe 5 weeks later, I was down the hall in a privileged situation to sit and talk with you guys as being part of the show, and we were reminiscing about if the Bears could just do certain things after the bye and go five games in, and then maybe they can get to the playoffs. And now, a year later, a little bit earlier, we can't even discuss the playoffs because of the situation they're in. It's inconceivable that this is where we are, given what they did in this offseason. What are your thoughts? I just can't believe that we're here.
It's not supposed to feel this bad. It's just not. Dennis Allen is supposed to be able to make much better things happen with his talent. I have to wonder how much the injuries in the back are hurting him, because Kyler Gordon's is maybe the Bears' best defender. It's right there between him and Jalen Johnson. And for what Dennis wants to do, it might be Kyler. And he's got no Kyler. He's got no Jalen. And yesterday without TJ Edwards, and like his methodology seemed off, Lawrence. Like, I haven't seen him create any pressure. I don't think it's just the D-line when Ben Johnson says we did not affect the quarterback. It's not supposed to be just the D-line when you hired Dennis Allen.
It's not, but that's the biggest part of what's going on. And yeah, I love Kyler Gordon as a blitzer, but look at the money that you're paying up front. Look at the draft capital that you're paying up front. If I hear one more person tell me that Jarvon Dexter is ready to take the next step, I've been telling you for 2 years that that's not the case. He's not that dude. And when you're a pass rusher, you know pretty quickly. Like, you don't have to wait. on a pass rusher, even if their technique isn't sound.
Yeah, the motor and the get off and the fire to get by is kind of evident, especially after a couple years.
I don't want to blame the guys on the back end of the Bears defense because their job is pretty much predicated by the guys on the front. Like if those guys are not getting pressure, sure, you can start getting exotic and crazy. You can start throwing zeros out there and see if that works. I would tell you that Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams and Sam Laporta would be a terrible offense to do that against. If it's a young, like last week, if you wanted to play that game against J.J. McCarthy, okay, I'm with that. Try to speed up a young, but Jared Goff has seen everything that you want to try and do.
Yes, he
and
has.
He knows how to go hot.
You know, from Dennis Allen's perspective, the one guy that keeps jumping out to me is Shamar Turner. And it feels like a manager who doesn't want to play the GM's guy in a baseball season. I don't know how Dennis Allen feels about Shamar Turner, but that's a healthy scratch yesterday, and you're getting nothing from Jervon Dexter. And you're getting, he played Passignan a lot. And
he's actually been pretty good.
He flashed a little bit. But at this point, don't you got to see what you have in Shamar Turner in your rotation?
Yes. Second round picks are supposed to start.
You've got to give him a shot to actually get out there because he's a guy who supposedly does have that fire and that edge. He punched somebody in the ding ding. Remember
that? He did punch someone in the ding ding.
I mean, we could have used that yesterday.
The Bears got punched in the ding ding.
I know, but I'm thinking of all the players who would have been good to get punched in the ding ding, and Shamar Turner wasn't even out there.
Joe is on the Northwest side. Hey, Joe, you're on the Score.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Guys, I still like the coach, and I think Caleb showed some improvement. I think if we had a better team around him, I think they'd be fine. But, guys, we're staring possibly another 550s with this team. You've got two against the Packers, one against the Ravens, one against the Eagles, and one against Pittsburgh. Seriously, they don't have anyone on that defensive line that understands outside contain. Guys,
that's true.
Braxton Jones is a failed left tackle. We need to face that fact. The general manager, if he was in the military, he would have been relieved for cause at this point. And I'm serious. I'm serious as a heart attack when I say that.
All right, at least you don't think he would have been put down.
Yeah, I don't know if we need to draw military comparisons and hold him in front of the tribunal and
it's football, mister.
And get the judge advocate general involved and all that stuff.
I mean, the head coach has told you exactly what he thinks about Braxton Jones, that he's the best we have. Is he good on every play? No. But he's the best we have, right? Told you that. When it's garbage time and he decides to take a look at Tyson Bagent, he decides to take a look at Canada.
I don't think that he was taking a look at Tyson Bagent. I think it was
saving Caleb.
I also, this is another thing.
So then maybe he's definitely taking a look at Theo Benedet. Why not just let Braxton play?
I agree with Olin on that too. Like there was a reason to keep playing Caleb in that game because the reps are important. Even bad reps, be out there. Your guys are out there. Be out there with them. And I'm not saying that Caleb tapped out. I don't think that's the case. I think his coach took him out of the game. But I would have probably fought someone to stay in that game, even though you're getting your teeth kicked in. You got to wear some of that.
Yeah, yeah. He was getting himself into trouble. Play after play after play.
That bunny hop in the pocket was pretty hilarious, though. I got to give him props for that.
Yeah, he can get by people, super excited about it.
It's amazing. Like, some of the the escapability inside the pocket for him is crazy. But I just feel like one of these times he's going to do that, and someone's going to put their helmet right underneath his chin. And then he's going to be out for a while. And then what?
I think that's the fear, because then what are you doing?
You can also just call it so that he doesn't, like, we're handing the ball off and we're getting out of here. But you need to be out there with those guys.
Yeah, because Caleb talked about being out there and trying to help in some ways, listening on the helmet. He's trying to say something to certain guys, et cetera. It's all a problem.
It's all a problem. Let's go out to Adam. Hey, Adam, you're on the Score. What's your thoughts on the Bears?
Hey, gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say one thing and then ask you a question. Was it me or was there a tremendous lack of effort all around on by the Bears?
I didn't really see the lack of effort. I'll be honest. Like, I don't know what players you're talking to.
Some people are mad at Byard on the Jameson Williams touchdown where he was at the sideline and then broke it back to the middle.
That's a miscommunication where Byard is going the other way and Nashon Wright is clearly thinking Byard is going to stay there. So I don't think Kevin Byard's a guy who's going to do that, but it's a worthy locker room topic. I saw them getting desperately out-schemed by a very comfortable quarterback. I mean, Jared Goff knows what the hell he's doing. You give him time, you make him feel comfortable, you let him feel comfortable, he's just going to pick your ass apart.
Yep.
No matter who his coordinator is.
It doesn't seem to matter, does it?
No.
Interesting how that worked. And that's why Dan Campbell made you wear it. Because he's like, oh, really? That was all him. We didn't do jack around here. It was just Ben. Oh, okay, cool. Here's 52. Enjoy that 52.
I bailed in the fourth quarter and recorded it to watch the rest this morning and went to Red Zone so I could see the end of Jake Browning and the Bengals. And so I could see not even the end. I didn't even make it to the end of Cowboys Giants, which just kept going all the way into a big part of the late window. But I saw enough Russ making perfect throws to keep them alive.
Yeah. Lawrence's guy, Mac Jones.
Yeah, Mac Jones. He's back, baby. He is out here slinging that pill. And I mean, to go
high
back
tide.
High tide indeed. Good weekend for the tide. Go back to one of our earlier callers, Joe Burrow getting hurt. Means that maybe you could take one of those 50-point games away off of your schedule. Because now Joe Burrow's not for that back-to-back Bengals and Ravens thing that mm-hmm. you were going to have to do.
Mm-hmm.
They got to get a lot of stuff fixed, and they need to fix it pretty quickly. Hey, Johnny, you're on the score.
All right, guys. We got 31 coaches, not counting the head coach. They got 5 weeks to prepare. And this is what they put out on the field? Is that... It's unacceptable. Us Bear fans, we don't accept it. What are these guys doing? What are these coaches doing during practice? They playing cards or what? What are they doing? Because they're not coaching. 31 coaches out there. Does anybody know what they're doing out there?
Isn't it a little more scary if they are coaching, Johnny?
But they are.
I think they are.
They're coaching.
That makes it more scary. I mean, they might be playing cards while they're doing it, you know, but they're coaching. They're trying.
They're coaching them up. And they're going to have to coach him up this week, too. And it's going to be rough.
Bears fans do not deserve it. I was hanging out with the in-laws.
Are you sure about that, Smee?
You think we deserve it?
Yeah.
You think you deserve it?
I think we all deserve
it. What did you do? What did you do?
Well, nothing. But I tune in every week. That's what I'm doing. So by default,
Tanny with the Catholic guilt. I love it.
Well, you think, look, they know that they've got you right where they want. They know that.
Well that's football fans everywhere. And yeah. Every NFL team, that's their fans.
But they tried. They tried this offseason. That's the thing. That's the worst part for me, is that they paid the number one coach $14 million a year.
They did.
And here they are.
And then they got his thoughts for the draft. And then the players that he wanted, they won't put on the field.
There's no way that he said, give me Ozzie Trapillo. There's no way in hell.
Let me
decides not to play.
Let me ask you this question.
Yes, then. As Lawrence subtweets me. Yes, go ahead.
What do you think the choice was at the first pick that they had? Whose choice was that?
Ben's, 100%.
What about the second one?
Those are polls. The bad ones go to polls, and the good ones go to Ben.
Okay.
But even Colston's not a good one because the vision of what you're doing, you can't win if you don't have anything on the line.
All I'm saying is that it's pretty clear with the pick of Colston Loveland that Ben had a huge part in this draft.
I agree.
So he should not be divorced from the decisions that were made in this draft.
That's the first round draft pick. You don't think it's possible that then in the second round, once Poles pivots and he's in his wacky look at me mode, and okay. He's got three picks that he then pivots to guys that he wants and has done a crap ass job of scouting.
Explain Luther Burden then.
That's
not a Ben draft.
No, that's Antoine Randall. That's Antoine Randall, right?
Okay,
there.
So we're gonna give that to him.
I think so. That's an offensive player.
Okay.
So is Ozzie Trabillo. I just want to help you out with that one.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Right.
And then they
But Poles is the offensive line guru, as we know.
We know for a fact that he's not. We know it that he's not. And it's amazing. I wonder if Ian Cunningham is sitting there going, I probably should have Probably should have taken one of them jobs that were available to me because I don't know if I'm going to get one now.
Before our talent evaluation is even more embarrassed.
It's pretty embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they're at.
It's not good.
No, it's not good. Speaks, it's not good.
No, it isn't.
You know what really sucks? The four of us as a group, as a wolf pack,
yes,
had a great weekend until the Bears game.
Yeah, they kind of damaged everything. Nico Hoerner might hit 300, Lawrence.
How dare you today? How dare you?
Nico Horner's on fire. You know what I did this morning? I watched the condensed Cubs game. I spent 10 minutes just sitting at my kitchen table, just smiling ear to ear. I mean, they didn't do everything right, but it sure as hell wasn't the Bears. And it wasn't another football team reminding of how far away the Bears are from that team.
Tanny, he's right. We might as well just lean into the Cubs playoff thing now.
It's baseball season
again.
They're
a juggernaut.
It just happened. That's not the point, Tanny. The point is they're not the Bears. That's the best thing about the Cubs right now.
I will say the Bob Uecker letter is the best thing I saw all weekend. That includes the bar mitzvah. That's how beautiful it was.
You glad I read the Bob Uecker letter at the bar mitzvah? I thought it was appropriate.
It was a better choice. You know your audience.
Here's how bad things are for the Bears, okay? Yeah. It's so bad that I got a text from Fells, from Sam Fells this morning, and he was like, hey, man, whenever you guys want to talk some hockey. And I was like, how dare you, sir?
Actually, it's a funny thing about that is, so like, I almost threw that out in the group thread. I was like, thank God I got my Hawks.
Dude, that's a guy. That's Sam's.
It was a bad night for Notre Dame Saturday, so you know I was looking for something to cling to.
Wait, aren't the Hawks kind of in the same position? They got a guy with the number one pick?
Yeah, no.
Supplemented with veterans that didn't work out.
And then you got rid of some of the veterans because they weren't playing correctly with the number one pick.
He's going to get developed this year. This year they're going to turn that thing around. I don't like that. Sam, you're smelling blood in the water. You're a hockey shark smelling Bears blood in the water.
They're right there for you this season, the Hawks, with the 100-year anniversary. They're going to lean into some nostalgia if they're not good. There's plenty of reasons to go to the United Center this year.
Sure.
I'm here for it.
All right, that's it on the Hawks and the Cubs, damn it.
Wait a minute.
Kurt Warner has watched the tape on the Bears, and you're going to want to hear what he has to say about some of the concepts offensively. That's next, damn it, on the Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
You're a big horse, and you must be ridden every Monday night.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf, maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield. Adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown. 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here tonight.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
I love the way that Caleb Williams played. We know that he's a tremendous playmaker. The one thing that they wanted him to do was, hey, play the game on first and second down. When we need the play to be made, now go be special. We saw two special plays on third down when they needed it.
NFL Network analyst.
If you think that was an awful performance, you don't know anything about football. That doesn't mean that I think he's a really good quarterback right now. There's lots of things that I see that he's got to get better at.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Busey Bank and Great Clips. Tonight, the Cubs road trip begins in Pittsburgh. Pregame coverage begins at 5:05, first pitch at 5:40 on the Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Why am I telling you that? Because after that, it's Chargers and Raiders on Westwood One.
It's quite a night of games here. Who's doing that game?
I know someone who is a part of the Westwood One family and also part of our show. It's Kurt Warner, and he joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Kurt, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you squeezing us in. As you can imagine, people in Chicago are not very happy about what it is that they saw yesterday. What did you see yesterday?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing we got to talk about is that I know we want to talk a lot about the offense and Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson, but I mean, obviously that game started on defense, and the fact that the defense wasn't able to, you know, stop anybody and really last five quarters, you know, Minnesota at the end of the Monday night game and that fourth quarter, and then what Detroit did yesterday, you know, that's the biggest issue that's out there, is they got to figure out a way to be able to stop some people defensively. And then you could start working on the offensive side of it. But, I mean, you know, from an offensive perspective, or at least Caleb Williams' perspective, again, I didn't think he played a terrible football game. There's a bunch to work on and things he's got to get better at. But sorry about that. Just arrived into the stadium. So, must be bringing some doctors in.
You know what? It seems like Kurt's fading away on us there. I hope he wasn't, like, going through security. He got farther and farther away while we were talking. Like, he doesn't want to be involved with this Bears thing, Speak, so he just kind of stepped back.
I hope his bacon, egg, and cheese sliders are ready at White Castle. I hope they are. That's usually what happens to me when I start fading away.
That was one of the best tips that you've ever given me.
The White Castle breakfast
White
sandwich.
Castle breakfast is elite.
They make them fresh.
They do. They
every
crack the
time.
Egg fresh.
Yes.
It is an elite breakfast sandwich.
Kurt Warner back with us here on 670 The Score.
No, not yet.
He's
we
not.
Keep talking about breakfast sandwiches.
I know, we certainly can.
But I agree with him that the defense and the way that the Lions were able to attack it, and that quote of not affecting the quarterback.
Yeah, that's horrifying. That's Ben Johnson talking about what the problems were. And it's not... And it leads to the broader issue of what is schematically an issue and what is just the talent. But either way, you got a quarterback that comfortable. I mean, Kurt Warner's been there with Orlando Pace et al. Sometimes in those Ram games where he can just sit back there and do whatever the hell he wants.
I also wonder with DA, like, do you then feel like, oh, I have to do the thing now? I've got to be the crazy defensive coordinator because we can't get pressure with four or five. I've got to now maybe do stuff that I don't necessarily want to do. Mm-hmm. And remember, the offensive line for the Lions, it's not like it's the same group. They've gone through a lot of changes too, and they were able to protect their quarterback, and their quarterback was able to protect himself mm-hmm. by getting the ball out quick. But even on play action, like the way that they were able to kind of sucker the Bears in some of those situations and make plays down the field was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's because they were running the ball with great effectiveness. So it's, you know, when you can do that, when you can't contain the edge, like I wonder, like if Dennis Allen more upset with that, their ability to set the edge, because it wasn't just Jahmyr Gibbs, it's David Montgomery who got outside with impunity a couple of times. And if that's the case, then... Woof, then everybody's scrambling, and then the play action leaves all kinds of wide open space there in the middle.
I love the people inside the Twitch. Someone said Kurt drove into a tunnel on purpose. Bless you. So that he didn't have to talk about what's going on with his team. That's bad. You are so good looking. You are having a day today,
yeah,
sir.
Man. Well, you know, your find of the Tylenol has been effective. I have Bears fever. And it's not the good kind.
Clearly.
I have Bears pneumonia, maybe. It's like the realization of just how freaking far away this thing felt yesterday. Just a horrendous feeling. Like, oh, 0-2 means the playoffs are toast, to me anyway. Last year, Lawrence, there were three 0-2 teams who didn't make the playoffs in a 17-game season.
Yeah, the math is a little different from 17 versus 16, but we've got Kurt back. So, Kurt, let's go back to the defense again. What was Detroit doing that allowed them to just kind of do whatever? Because they averaged what, 8.5 a play. They were doing inside runs, outside runs. It didn't seem to matter. What did you see on how they were so effective?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was anything special or anything that they hadn't done in the past. They were just winning the line of scrimmage. And as you said, they were winning early downs, which allows them to be able to do the things they want to do, pushing the ball down the field, the play action game, and all of that. But, I mean, as you said, they were just winning. Whatever they decided to do, they were winning the line of scrimmage, and that's where it all starts, especially, you know, with the Lions. They lost the line of scrimmage in week one, And they got beat bad by the Packers. They won it this time around and obviously beat the Bears pretty good.
You were somebody who people loved to listen to and read and watch your incredible breakdown of Caleb after week one, because you pushed back on this idea by many, including me, of concerns for Caleb. We know it's going to take a while, but in terms of what you saw yesterday, did you see a continuation of some good things? Like, where is your concern level for Caleb to be a viable top-tier NFL quarterback eventually?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing that makes it hard at times to evaluate game to game. Because when I went back and evaluated week one, just like I do every week, you take it play by play. And you look at the play and you say, where should a guy have gone? What's the read? Where should his eyes have been? All of that stuff. And so really in both games, I think Caleb has done a decent job of, you know, getting the ball where it should go. And so from that perspective, you know, the first 2 weeks have not been awful. And, you know, it's not as if, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing. But there are so many elements within that I think he needs to work on. You know, there's times that he comes out and I wonder why his eyes are where they are. You know, if you watch the breakdown last week on a couple of those plays that, you know, that he missed, those throws that he should have made, you know, he like turned his head and he's looking at the sideline with the idea, I believe, and I don't know for a fact, but the idea to try to hold the defense and the linebacker to that side so he can come back and throw, whether it's that skinny post or the end of Komet or whatever it was. You know, and it's little things like that where you're like, you don't have to look over to the side. Like, you're doing too much, which means that when you come back and have to look all the way from the sideline back to the left-hand side, you're just doing too much at one time. There's footwork issues. You know, we've seen it in both games, is that when he's going to the right spot, there's a number of throws that he's missed simply because of footwork. He's got a bad tendency to have his feet lined up, basically, I'll say to the left of the target. You know, it doesn't always mean to the left-hand side of the field, but his feet will be lined up in a position where, you know, when he goes to throw it, it's way off to the right, and it becomes more of an arm throw than it is, you know, being able to lead with your body. And he's missed a number of throws in two games that way. And so you kind of have to look at it two ways, is that he's not making a bunch of bad decisions, and he's finding – you know, a completion quite often, but there's a lot of nuance within that I think he has to get better at if he's going to take that step and, as you say, to become a really good starting quarterback in the NFL.
This segment with Kurt Warner is sponsored by Great Clips. It's going to be great, and it's brought to you by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. If you've ever been on a lopsided loss, Kurt, what's the role of the quarterback in the next week? Do you just flush the game, or are there conversations that need to be had from a team perspective if you're the starting QB?
Yeah, usually when you get to this level, you know, there's not huge conversations that you have to have from week to week. You know, I remember back in, you know, 08, the year that we went to the Super Bowl with the Cardinals, we had started fast, and then we played like four playoff teams down the stretch after we had clinched our spot in the playoffs, and we got blown out by every one of those playoff teams. So after a few games like that where it's like, okay, we're getting ready for the playoffs, we just got blown out by everybody that's good in this league, you know, we did have to have some sit-downs or grab the leaders and talk to certain people. But, it, you know, in game two of a new regime, as you're trying to put things together, I'm not sure there's a talk that needs to be had outside of, and again, I don't know all the nuances of what they're doing offensively and defensively, outside of the fact that, you know, if what they're putting on the field is just not a very good product, not just, you know, by point standards, but, you know, like all the details are off and guys are messing up assignments left and right and that sort of stuff, then you always have to, if you're a leader, step in and go, okay, you know, we got to correct this. And the first thing you always want to do is hold yourself accountable. Like, hey, I missed these four throws. I got to be better. You know, I got to make these throws. Even though we got beat by 30, you never know what one or two throws turns the game around. So you take accountability, but you do have to point out those types of things if there's a dramatic, you know, issue going on within the offense or the defense or the team as a whole. But, you know, I'm not sure that's necessarily the case as much as just everybody, you know, putting it together, growing together, learning the new system and putting a better product on the field next week.
Kurt Warner with us here on Spiegel and Holmes. Do you think he leaves the pocket too early sometimes? And how often does he do that as you watch?
No, I mean, I don't think right now that I'm saying that, you know, too often. You know, like when I look back at his college tape, yeah, I thought there was a lot of times that he was, you know, he was dancing around or moving and trying to create when he didn't have to. I'm not sure I felt that way the last 2 weeks. I feel like most of the time it's been out of necessity, you know, when things have fallen apart in front of him. So I would say that I feel like he's trying to do a better job of staying in the pocket, you know, and getting through some of his reads before he takes off and creates.
Because that's my biggest concern, is that he leaves a little early instead of staying for that extra split second. I've heard that from a lot of football people. And so it's interesting that you're not seeing that to the degree.
Well, I think the thing you also have to understand is the reason that you stay and stand in the pocket when you start to feel pressure is because you feel like something is going to come open. You know, like as a quarterback, if I'm standing in there and I'm making a read and I realize that, you know, the defender just grabbed, you know, whatever, grabbed the out, and so I'm going to have the corner, I'm much more apt to stand in the pocket that half a second because I know something's coming. If I don't know something's coming, then it's easy to just say, well, stand in the pocket. But if I don't know that something's going to come open and all of a sudden I'm starting to feel pressure, then I'm going to be more apt to move and create than just stand there and go, oh, my gosh, here comes the pressure, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do here. And so, again, it's so easy to sit back and watch tape and just say, well, I mean, if he stays in an extra second there, this is coming open. But he's got to know that's coming open. And I think, again, that's part of the problem with Caleb right now is slowing the game down, understand what he's seeing, and so he can start to understand that timing better of when he's got to make a throw, when he's got to have his feet and eyes in a particular spot, how long he can hold in the pocket knowing, hey, this is coming. This is the timing of this particular throw. I've got time to hang in there because I know based off of what the safety did or what this linebacker's doing that throw is going to be there. And I think those are all things that, he's got to get better at. But I think that's what leads to a quarterback and their willingness to stand in the pocket is based off of not just because I'm willing to stand here and get hit. It's based off of the fact that, hey, something's coming open. If I can just hang here for that half a second, I got a chance to make that throw.
Kurt, that was a really nice moment yesterday on the pregame with Coach Mooch and Tom Izzo and Mooch getting his jersey retired at Northern Michigan.
It was. You know, it's pretty cool that, you know, we joke with Mooch all the time, and he always jokes, you know, he had a cup of coffee in the Canadian League. And I don't know if anybody's really, you know, we know him as a coach and how good he was as a coach. I don't think any of us really know him as a player. And so to see that moment and then, you know, have him talk about how he led a team from 0-10 to a national championship the next year and, you know, a guy from a Division II school being eighth in the Heisman voting. I mean, you know, it starts to put in perspective how good of an athlete and how good of a player he was. And I don't know if any of us really appreciated that. So really cool moment. I mean, obviously, you know, Coach Izzo and his history and how great a coach he is. And I know their friendship. That was a really cool moment. And he was blown away. He was surprised. You know, we were just talking that he had a college teammate that was being inducted into their Hall of Fame. And his teammate had passed away. And so, you know, like 30 minutes before he found out, he was doing an acceptance speech, you know, for his teammate that wasn't going to be able to be there. And so then, you know, to have it flipped, him thinking about that direction and having it flipped on him that his number was going to be retired was really a cool and special moment for all of us, but for him, I know.
Outstanding. Kurt, thanks. Have a great call tonight.
All right, guys. Take care.
we got a lot to do in a very little amount of time because the Cubs are playing against the Pirates and we're done here at 5:05. We got to talk about the Tush Push and Caleb if we have time. We got Jalen Johnson coming on at 4:30.
Yeah, and we need to hear from the coach because the coach just talked. So we're going to hear his thoughts on a couple different issues, including the quarterback. That's next here on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Lawrence, everything's fine. Matt, everything's fine. Tanny, everything's fine.
Afternoons on The Score.
We're not going to win many games.
There was a qualifier in there. Before he said that, he was like, if we do X or Y, whatever it was, they did it. Whatever it was. That's what they did.
Clearly, it was powerful if you remembered it.
Well, I mean,
it's very powerful.
He was trying to warn everybody of what you can't do as a football
team. Like, say, pre-snap penalties.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
And post-snap penalties, too.
Sure. I mean,
they've averaged 10 penalties a game over the first two games.
They had the 12 in the first game last night, or yesterday, as you say, Lawrence. They had 8 for 50 yards. 2 false starts. They have 6 false starts in 2 games. One more.
There was an illegal chop block in there.
Yeah, chop block on Darnell Wright. Drew Dahlman had a hold. Braxton Jones, a face mask. What was your favorite lineman penalty? What do you think?
They had a lot of them. So let's hear from the Bears head coach. He just finished talking to the assembled media. Our guy Weezy asked him what happened between training camp and now.
Let's start right out. Hey, what happened?
Ben, from a defensive overview standpoint, obviously there was an edge throughout training camp and the things that you guys were able to do there. How do you square that with what you showed in the month of August with what's happened in the fourth quarter last Monday and then what happened yesterday?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Dan, because that's the truth. And we talked about that today at the team meeting. Was we've seen that type of football, that brand of football that we want to be about. We saw it throughout training camp. We didn't see it enough yesterday for it to be up to our standard, and that's really the way the game went. You know, we got outgained by a significant number of yards, and really it came down to, I think, 10 explosive plays for over 300 yards, and that's just really not what we want to be about. We came into the game with a plan and how we wanted to contain these explosive athletes, and we just didn't do a good enough job at the end of the day. But I do agree with you. I think it starts with how we play, less so about the scheme or anything like that, but our play style really needs to stand out in a more positive fashion going forward.
Well, I mean, he's got to stay level. He just has to.
What he's talking about there, though, the idea of, like, we didn't play hard, if that's where you're at in week two, that's not good. Now, and maybe it can be fixed because we know that there were practices that weren't necessarily crisp. And then we would hear about good practices.
You took effort as the hardness that he's talking about, or the physicality?
I'm both. Like, I look at that and say that he's not happy with the way. Forget about what happened to them, but the way that they played was not great. And I'm sure the eye in the sky don't lie. There was a lot of things that he saw that he didn't like. What about the quarterback? Here, no?
More on defense.
Oh, my bad. That's my bet. One more on what the problems were on defense.
Yeah, you know, I've been pretty involved, I feel like, throughout my tenure here so far. I was sat in quite a few defensive meetings, both with the staff and with the players in the springtime, and tried to do the same throughout the course of training camp. And so I know what the calls are. I know how we should align. I know how technique is being taught right now, you know, and I've got a lot of faith in our coaching staff, too. I brought in Dennis Allen for a reason. He does a phenomenal job coaching it to not only the coaches, but to the players. You know, I got a lot of faith and confidence that the experience we have on that side of the ball is going to shine through for us, and we'll get this thing back cranking the way we want it to go. Listen, it's a good group that we went against yesterday, and, you know, they were hungry. That showed on the tape. They finished, you know, they had the explosive plays, and we got to play complementary football at the end of the day too. If one unit isn't isn't playing as well as we'd like. We need both offense and special teams to come through and balance us on out. And we simply didn't stop the bleeding in really any phase and play complimentary football.
So that's really important. That's really important because he's taking ownership of the defense. Some coaches will just abdicate that to a former head coach like Dennis Allen, but he's saying it's him and he knows all the calls. Because yesterday after the game, in this key cut right here, he talks about some of the calls and he wasn't questioning DA. He was talking about his own choices, apparently.
What about the defensive plan that you had coming into the day didn't quite pan out for you today?
Yeah, you know, we knew that we need to set the edge there to try to contain their running game. I think they were able to bounce and get the edge a few times there. And so that hurt us in the running game. And then in the passing game, we simply didn't affect the quarterback. You know, we tried to mix up the coverages, and they hurt us a little bit in some of our single high stuff with their speed. So the explosive plays are an issue. You know, you feel those. I did think the defense did a great job despite the turnovers and the fourth down. They hit the field. They were being resilient. They were fighting their tails off. It just didn't go our way today.
So that's interesting to me because there's Jonathan Vilma and others questioning during the game, why is Dennis Allen doing zone? Why is he doing so much zone? It's Ben using his knowledge of Jared Goff and his thought process, and that's his right as a head coach. And we've talked about that in a good way affecting the defense. I wonder if Dennis Allen thinks it was a good way or not.
If that's what happened, there's part of it is like you make the suggestion. Like, hey, this is what I think might be effective. And maybe DA is like, thank you, appreciate that.
You know the guy. All right, let's go with your plan.
But here's the plan from what I see on tape versus what you may know. Like, it's one of those things where you might be too involved and too smart and too, like, I know these guys. Like, maybe you should let your guy do his thing.
That's what I'm getting at. And we don't know exactly, but those conversations are really interesting to me because you have the right as the head coach to overrule
absolutely
a damn good defensive coach. But I wonder how Dennis feels about it. Got to wait till Thursday.
There's some more offensive stuff, but we're going to save it and we're going to put it into the next segment because we do want to talk about what Caleb did in yesterday's game. And also, there's a play that Ben doesn't like that probably could have helped him yesterday. We'll discuss that next here on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.